Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of Push to Shout. I'm your host, Brew Talking Powder.
This is Skippy Sigmatic.
And we're going to talk about some video games, but before we do that, how was your week, Skippy?
Pretty good. I saw Interstellar. I saw that yesterday.
By the master himself.
The master, Christopher Nolan. I actually kind of have a lot to say about this, I think, because what I've been doing for like the last 24 hours is going online and looking at other people's opinions of it, which is what I always do whenever I see a movie. And I find that I disagree with like most things about the movie with most people. I think I kind of have a minority opinion. Well, first of all, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, actually. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was groundbreaking, but it was really good. Very enjoyable. And I think the conclusion I've come to is that the reason that I like it is because I went in with almost zero knowledge of the film other than the fact that it's Christopher Nolan and has something to do with space. I didn't know that it had Matthew McConaughey in it. I didn't know anything about it. I'd heard good things mostly. I'd seen Flimsy say that it was like the worst movie he'd ever seen in theater on Twitter. But whatever, I went in with kind of high hopes, but with also reserved expectations given Christopher Nolan's history. Dark Knight Rises, I didn't like at all, really. But I really like most of his work: The Prestige, Memento, The Dark Knight, Batman Begins. He makes a lot of good stuff. Inception, I really liked Inception. But I know that he's really bad at writing a script. He had help with this one. I think his brother like helped write it or something, and his brother wrote Memento, which is in my opinion by far his best work, Christopher Nolan's best work. It's a really good movie, but anyway, I don't know, I had no idea what to expect. It started out with like Matthew McConaughey on a farm, and I didn't expect that. So I was already kind of confused, but I thought it would start like with him being an astronaut, and then it was just like, no, he's a farmer, so whatever. But I'm not gonna like spoil anything about the movie because I assume that a lot of the viewers
haven't seen it either.
Okay, so I'm not gonna spoil a lot about it, but I will say, like, it's not, as it goes on, it gets a little, well, I don't know. Here's the thing: from the beginning, from pretty much the first 20 minutes, it kind of establishes that there's something going on that is maybe not paranormal, but, well, yeah, by definition paranormal, but not necessarily like outside of scientific grounds, but kind of like, okay, this is beyond current evidence of things, of how science works, of how gravity works, of how something works. So I, from the beginning, like, what that tells me is like, okay, I got to suspend my disbelief a lot. Like, this is not necessarily going to be a realistic movie. It's not trying to conform to scientific theories and whatnot, which apparently is the way that it was marketed, which I didn't know. I didn't know that apparently, like, they'd been saying, oh yeah, we had real scientists approving the script of the movie and all this crap. And so I just kind of went in going like, okay, it's going to be a dumb sci-fi movie. I'm ready for that. So I think that's a lot of the reason I enjoyed it, because it gets kind of absurd. It gets really absurd. But I don't mind that at all. The dialogue is really overdone, pretty much in every way. Like, they over-explain every bit of the movie, which they kind of have to in a lot of ways, because like it involves not time travel, but relativity with like time dilation and stuff. And so it gets really complicated to people who aren't familiar with that. Like, I studied the shit out of that when I was like 16. I was obsessed with Einstein's theory of relativity and all that stuff. So I could follow it really easily because I already had experience with it. But like, my sister sitting next to me, who doesn't give a shit about that stuff, she was sitting there like, I don't even know what's going on. So I don't know. You have to like keep in mind with these movies that they're trying to write for a wide audience that doesn't necessarily know the things that you do.
Nolan's genius is too deep for mortals to comprehend.
No. That's okay. So that's another thing, is that a lot of the complaints I see online are people saying, I mean, it was an okay movie, but it was also just really dumb, and it thinks that it's smart, or dumb people think that they're smart when they see it, or whatever. That's, to me, that just isn't really true at all. I never got that impression from any of his movies. Some of them have been kind of hard to follow, like Conception. It's kind of hard to follow because there's like four or five different layers of whatever going on. Like, you have to follow a lot of different plot lines and the time changing between all of them and all that crap. So it can be hard to follow, but you don't necessarily need to be smart to follow it. You just have to pay attention. Like, a stupid person can follow it as well as a smart person. It doesn't have anything to do with how smart you are. And when I saw Inception and I understood it, I didn't feel smart for understanding it. I just felt like I'm a good movie goer. Because, like, most of the people I watch movies with, they don't pay enough attention. They're on their phones or whatever. And, like, fine, whatever. But right. When they don't understand something like Inception, it's usually just because they don't pay enough attention. And then, like, halfway through, they realize they haven't been keeping up with what's going on. And then they start asking questions. But by that time, it's too late. And the movie's starting to pick up the pace. So I think that's what another thing that that's happening to a lot of people watching this is, like, it gets moving kind of quickly in certain spots where, like, the time dilation is going on and there's two different plot lines at the same time. And so I wouldn't call it a hard to follow movie, but I can understand why people would go, wait a minute, what's happening? Mm. But the script is not great and the dialogue is not great. And there's a lot of dumb stuff in it about, like, love being a power that conquers all and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, I mean, but it's like, it's a blockbuster movie by Christopher Nolan. Like, I don't know, like, are you going in expecting some kind of, like, revolutionary plot? Like, I just don't know what people's expectations were with this movie, because I didn't have any expectations, and I kind of loved it. Or I didn't love it, but it was great. It was really enjoyable. So if you haven't seen Interstellar yet, just clear your mind of everything that you think you know about that movie and go in thinking, this is going to be a blockbuster sci-fi movie that isn't necessarily realistic in any way. And you'll probably enjoy it far more than you otherwise would. Because I think that's people's main problems. It's just, it's perspective and it's expectation. And like, I talked to Flimsy about why he didn't like it. And I think that's a lot of the reason he didn't like it. And also because I think he's the kind of person that focuses more on the plot than I do. And even though I'm like an English major and I'm very familiar with how plots work and stuff, and I can rip a plot to shreds when it's by Christopher Nolan, like, I always, like, after Dark Knight Rises, like, I just sat there like, holy shit, there's so many things wrong with the plot. But that's not the only thing I don't like about the Dark Knight Rises. Like, it's not its main issue. I go to films to enjoy. I prioritize directing over writing when it comes to most movies, and so it just doesn't bother me as much. I don't know, whatever. That's why I could enjoy the Metal Gear Solid series. But yeah, I don't have a lot more to say about that without going into spoilers, but just, it's worth seeing. And oh my god, it's a fantastic soundtrack. Hans Zimmer, kind of to be expected at this point, like, he's gonna make something pretty good, but
he can really do no wrong.
It fits the movie so well. Like, that, I think that's what Hans Zimmer really excels at. It's not necessarily that he's like this amazing composer. It's that he is amazing at fitting his compositions with what's going on screen and thematically fitting it together. He's really great at that. And like, there's some really intense moments in space that are kind of, they kind of remind me a little bit of Gravity in some ways, which I didn't love Gravity, but I won't go into that. But they're made so much better by his score, which is this, it repeats itself a lot and it kind of grows and grows and grows and grows. And it, like, it really stresses you out, in a really good way. But yeah, I liked that movie. It's worth seeing.
Cool shit.
Just don't expect something smart, 'cause it's not a smart movie. And you, I don't know, I guess some people walk out of it feeling smart, but that's their problem. Not mine. The other movie I saw the last half of, I'd already seen this, but I watched it again. Grave of the Fireflies, which I'm a fan of Miyazaki's work. I haven't seen a lot of his stuff, but I know you are also a huge fan of Miyazaki.
This one's Takahata. Isao Takahata.
Oh, it's but it's Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, yeah.
My bad. I'm, like I said, I've only seen Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, this, and I think that's it. I don't think I've seen any others. So I need to get to work on that. But God,
what a fucking movie.
Yeah. Great movie. Jesus Christ. And so just crippling, like emotionally just
it's such Jesus a tragedy. Christ. It's such yeah. a tragedy. Like in its Shakespearean kind of
yeah,
just
like
hopeless,
in every way. Like complete. It is the most tragic story you can imagine.
It's their it's his fault.
Yeah, yeah. Every bad thing that happens can be blamed on the main character, but you still feel really sympathetic for him. And it's just it's
if you haven't seen that, you have to see it. It is required viewing as a human being.
Yeah. And I would argue that Spirited Away might be must see too, just in how purely creative it is. Like this, like Grave of the Fireflies is almost the opposite of it, because it's far less lighthearted and it's grounded pretty heavily in reality.
Yeah.
And that's part of what's so tragic about it, is that it's like a real, it feels really real, and the setting is really real, but it's also a setting that hasn't been explored a lot, which is Japanese suffering in the late stages of World War II. Which, holy shit, that's rough. I don't want to harp too much on it, but it's a good movie, and you kind of have to see it, but you have to mentally prepare yourself too. And it kind of, this is a weird comparison, but have you ever seen City of God?
I haven't.
I just compare it because City of God is one of the only other movies that I've watched that has like nearly brought me to tears. I don't think I've ever cried at a movie. I don't know what that says about me as a person, but City of God and Grave of the Fireflies have gotten me damn close. And, City of God is like it's not animated. It's a Brazilian movie. Like it's all Brazilian actors, it's subtitled and all that. And it's kind of like The Wire in Rio de Janeiro, the favelas. It follows like the gangs kind of fighting each other and stuff. And it's just, again, it's a really tragic story. Like just characters that are flawed and still sympathetic, and just it's really well written and really sad because of how real it feels. Like you watch it and you think like this stuff happens to real people, and that's what kind of makes it so tragic. But damn, those are two good movies, so see those. On a lighter note, I guess I watched Matthew Matosas's, this was from last week. You recommended me watch Matthew Matosas's Metal Gear Solid reviews. And I watched them, and they were interesting. There's a lot to say about those games, and he says a lot about those games, but you still feel like, holy shit, there's so much more to talk about. But damn, I find myself agreeing with him pretty much 75% of the time, probably. There's some things like he calls the Metal Gear Solid 3 theme cheesy and says it's out of place at the end, but I thought that it was like perfect.
During the fight with the boss?
At the end of the fight, yes. When you're like,
you're not supposed to be fighting her at that point.
Well, that's
like, you should have killed her by then.
Not killed the boss fight for the first time, and I got bombed because I didn't know what to do. So it felt fitting at the time because I was like stressing out because I knew that it was like a timer. And so I knew that when it was getting to the end of the song that I needed to kill her, and I was like close to it.
Still with us?
What? You're cutting out. Mike?
Hello?
Hi. Are you there? We're gonna have to edit
this.
Yeah,
I think we're back. Something happened with the connection. But
we'll have
back.
To go. Remember, we're 14 minutes in, so remember that.
All right.
I don't know. Maybe we won't edit it. Maybe this will be raw. Anyway, yeah, they're good reviews. I still like. I played through those games maybe a month and a half ago to a month ago. I still think about them occasionally, and like I still find myself like going back and forth on how I feel about them, especially like Metal Gear Solid 2. I really enjoyed it while I was playing it, and then right afterwards I kind of felt like I didn't like it that much. But as I think back on it, like I just go back and forth. Like the whole meta nature of it's like the last chapter of it when you don't know if it's real or not, and like
yeah,
Raiden doesn't know if he's in a VR mission, and the corporal or whatever he's the commander he is
Colonel
turning into a robot. Like that shit gets crazy. I loved that. Like it was awesome. It was one of the coolest moments I've ever had in a game. I wish games would do things like that more often. But overall, like the plot was so nonsensical, and I didn't care about most of the characters, especially like the villains and stuff. And Ocelot had no motives. Like you didn't know what he was doing the whole time, and I don't think that Kojima knew either.
Ocelot was kind of really only came into his own in 3.
Yeah, 3's Ocelot was pretty fantastic. I like how like it starts out and you kind of hate him a little bit, and then he grew on me so much over the course of that game.
The poke, the eye patch poke.
Yeah, I like that. Just that whole fight, like that when that fight started at the end, I was going, oh my god, because this was like, it had probably been like an hour or an hour and a half since you started fighting. Like it goes straight from Volgan to Metal Gear to Boss and then to Ocelot, like almost all in a row. Like there are moments that break up the action a little bit, but I at the beginning of when Ocelot comes up, I was like, oh my god, Jesus Christ, this isn't over yet. But the way that they handled it was so enjoyable that I really like. Metal Gear Solid 3 is such a great game. there's a lot to love about that damn game. Yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking about Metal Gear Solid recently because I showed it to my brother-in-law I think I've mentioned it before. Like he's kind of your typical casual gamer, like Call of Duty. He's played Uncharted, and I don't know, he's probably played like an Assassin's Creed game and stuff like that. He's played a few AAA games. I showed him Metal Gear Solid. I showed him like the first part of Metal Gear Solid 1, and then I showed him the intros of MGS 2 and MGS 3. It was really interesting seeing the perspective, like seeing someone react to Metal Gear Solid when their only experience with games is like Call of Duty and stuff. I still don't really know like what his like. I internally, I'm wondering if he was thinking like, "Oh my god, this fucking guy is crazy." Like, I don't know how anyone could like this, but I don't know. I also don't know how anyone couldn't enjoy Metal Gear Solid to some extent, even if it's mostly just making fun of it. Like, that's a lot of the enjoyment I get out of Metal Gear Solid is like the campiness of it, which it's impossible to tell what's intentionally campy and what isn't, and that's part of the fun.
It takes an attention span. I mean, you have to be willing to put. You know, it's not gonna.
Oh my god, yeah.
You can't just sprint around shooting people and triggering cutscenes.
Yeah, gameplay wise. Gameplay wise, that's one of my biggest worries. If he tries to play it, I don't know if he would enjoy it because it's. Especially like the first one, it's very much just a stealth game. And if you try to rush through it, if you get frustrated with it, then you don't have a good time with it. You have to be slow with it. But story wise, too, I just don't know how someone would react to it if they go in with the wrong attitude. It's kind of like Interstellar. Like if you go into Metal Gear Solid expecting it to be like this kind of serious action game that maybe is a little bit grounded in reality or anything like that, then you're going to be totally thrown for a ride because it's not at all that. I don't know. It'll be really interesting. I hope he plays through them. I might get him like a collection pack or something for Christmas just to force him to play through it and to hear his reactions about it, because it's interesting because I think most of the people who play Metal Gear Solid are so already experienced with games and stupid shit on the internet and kind of stuff like that. Like the general demographic that the game that of people who play that game are more equipped to handle its really ridiculous moments, and there are a lot of them, but we'll see. I hope you plays them. Let's see. Another thing that happened to me this week. I've got a lot of stuff. Another thing that happened to me is, I don't know if you saw this, the creator or one of the creators of Rhythm Doctor shouted out our podcast.
No fucking way. That's so cool. I love that game.
Yeah. He tweeted at me and he said that he listened to the part of the podcast. I don't know if he listened to the rest of it, but he listened to the part that we were talking about Rhythm Doctor. And he said that it was like, he really enjoyed listening to our kind of in-depth analysis of it and stuff. And I was like, holy shit, thank you. It was really cool. I don't know how he found out about it. He must have Googled or searched for Rhythm Doctor or something and seen me mention it and then linked the podcast or something. I don't know. But that was cool. Shout out
to
him.
That is really cool. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you'd be excited to learn about that.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's a good game. Once again, if you haven't played that game, fucking go play it. Holy shit. Let's see. Tonight I did two more things. And these were both from today. I watched the last Formula One race of the season. That's something that I've been following pretty religiously for the last few years. Formula One, I've watched every race for the last 3 years, I think. It's really enjoyable. It's a weird sport, and it's everything about it is just kind of bizarre and doesn't feel like it should exist. Like the amount of money that they spend on it and the amount of power they get out of these tiny engines and stuff, like it's kind of mind blowing. Just the sheer speeds that they go around and oof. That's cool. If anyone's looking for like a weird kind of sport to get into, you should check out F1. Like I feel like people who like video games would like F1 in general. Cause from like a technical standpoint, it's really interesting to read about like how they engineer it and the kind of clever things that they do with the engines and stuff. But also just from a pure entertainment aspect, it's really entertaining the competition has been pretty fierce and each one of the drivers has like a really interesting kind of personality of their own. And it's fun. It's a weird, weird thing, and I really like it. But anyway, they had their last race, so they've wrapped up the championship, and it'll be back in March. But I don't know. That's just something that I thought, you know, if people are looking for something new, go for it in March. Because it's interesting, and it's getting more and more interesting, too, because they just changed the rules around and got new engines and all that stuff. But anyway, thought I'd mention it. And my last thing is actually just before this podcast, I played a little bit of this. It was free on Amazon App Store for a few days ago. It's called Monument Valley. Have you heard
Fantastic
of that?
Fantastic game. Played all the way through it. Loved it.
Yeah. I've only played like the first few levels, like kind of the tutorial area, basically. I've played through that. And, it's basically Fez with M.C. Escher
paintings. It's a four-dimensional... So
yeah.
Fez, you move and operate in two-dimensional planes, and then you rotate in 3D space. Monument Valley, you rotate a 3D set of objects through four-dimensional space, and your perspective determines where your three-dimensional character can walk, much like in Fez, how your 2D perspective determines where your 2D character can walk. It's just like Fez, but so much fucking better.
I couldn't get through Fez. God. I didn't love Fez, but this I feel like I can enjoy this a lot more than I don't know. I still don't even really know what I didn't like that much about Fez.
Fez was padded so much, and it had basically the same gameplay the whole time.
Monument Valley is
shorter, sweeter, and has like a finite number of levels that all do really unique and different things, and it never feels boring.
Yeah, if playing Fez, there's a point where it starts branching, and you can go to like multiple levels at once if you want to. And I think that's the point where it started to fall apart for me, because I was like, I don't want to have
boring.
To keep up with where I am and what I'm doing. Like, I just want to, like with a puzzle game, I just want to go from level to level, you know?
Right.
And that seems like that's exactly what this is laid out to be. The only thing I don't like about Monument Valley, and this is probably a weird complaint, but like Fez, I think it feels like it indulges too much in its mysticism kind of feel to it. You know what I'm talking about?
It does a little, but unlike Fez, it kind of coheres into something understandable at the end.
Yeah.
Or at least something interesting. Fez doesn't.
I hope so. And I also feel like that's probably a reaction that I get early on that I won't get as much later on, because like early on it's not doing anything crazy with like the level design and stuff. And so it plays this like really atmospheric sounding, like, ooh, this is so mysterious kind of music and all that stuff. And you're playing a game that seems really simple at first, but I think it'll open up and maybe be a little more fitting. But yeah, it's kind of off-putting right now. And yeah, it's kind of, I can tell there's going to be some kind of little story, but I have no fucking idea what it's going to be about. I don't know. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. Yeah, and it was free.
I don't want to spoil it.
No, it's
it,
not.
It's very
so
good.
Sorry if you missed out on it being free, but it was. I think they came out with a DLC recently or something, and that's why it was free.
Oh,
anyway.
Seriously? I'll have to play that.
Yeah, yeah, they came out with like a little bit of extra content for like $2 or $3 or something. So, yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Well, on my end, I guess because we just talked about Rhythm Doctor, I'll put my Rhythm Doctor thing here. I completed Rhythm Doctor, S-ranked all the songs.
It's a nightmare.
Including the last secret song, tier 6, I think it is. Yeah. And to get an S-rank, you have to not miss anything. So it was tough, but it was really, really satisfying. And you have to perfect the hardest song before that level to unlock it. So it's kind of at the end. I think there are empty spaces for where he plans to add more levels. And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
all
I'm
the
sure
way
there
at
are.
The end of those. So even as he adds them, that's like the last thing. So I can finally I don't really want to put it down, but I can and not feel like I've got more to do.
Yeah.
I've also been playing a lot of Binding of Isaac Rebirth, because the Binding of Isaac is fantastic and Rebirth is fantastic and you should get it. Yesterday I watched Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with Johnny Depp. It's that kind of gonzo journalism movie. It's so fucking strange. It's the strangest movie I've ever seen, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's these characters are on every drug imaginable, just freaking out on this crazy trip, and it sounds like kind of more cliche than it is, almost. Like, it sounds like, and it could be executed really poorly, but they really kind of make it believable. It's not just, wow, look at all these crazy visuals. They seem to be kind of sort of grounded, and it's really hard to tell how much of it is real and how much of it is just kind of what they're hallucinating. And they also make you feel like whatever shit they're hallucinating that's probably not real, they still make it feel important and not false. Like, the stakes are real despite how you not knowing how much of it is actually real. It's a really cool movie. I'm going to have to watch it again just to, like, understand what happened.
Yeah.
Like,
I've been reluctant.
It's very strange.
I've been reluctant to see that because I've always felt like it might be one of those movies that, like, potheads like, because it's crazy. I don't know if it's actually
definitely
good
not like that. Definitely
okay.
Not like that. It's a little more subtle than that. Well, a lot more subtle than that.
I'll have to see it.
Yeah, it's not like crazy in the kind of like whimsical or screwball kind of way. It's some of the parts are very frightening. Not like scary horror movie, but I mean some of the things the characters do, and again, I don't really want to spoil it, but there's some like real rage and violence, and it's really interesting.
Cool.
I want to pay closer attention the next time I watch it, but yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. It's really weird too, though.
Yeah.
Been playing some Smash 3DS. My younger brother flew in from Texas, so we've been playing Smash 3DS together, so that's been fun. My university, the Nintendo Wi-Fi thing, just doesn't work. I can't play online matchmaking with people, so I've basically just been playing Smash 3DS alone against bots for months, so this is like my kind of first fun experience with the game. It's really fun, but you know, this is me saying that right when Smash Wii U comes out, so
yeah.
It's kind of old news for everyone else, but yeah, it's fun a fun game. I also had a free weekend with Pool Nation. It's like this billiards game, and it's, you know, it works. You can hit the balls and they'll go around and they'll go in the holes, and Wow, it's cool.
Cool.
It is kind of fun though to like it shows you guides on certain difficulties, and you can like kind of see where the balls are going to bounce, so you can plan out these ridiculous trick shots that would be like impossible to execute in real life with your skills that the regular person has. But it really gets boring quickly. I would never play it again, even if it was free. I started the Monkey Island. Is it The Secret of Monkey Island? Is that the full title?
I don't remember. It is a longer title than Monkey Island,
Anyway, I started playing the first Monkey Island, and it's good. I'm hankering for some pirate adventures,
I've never
but
played those games.
the writing's been really good so far. I'm not very far though, but it's really cool. It's got a sense of humor about itself and kind of
Was it
goofy pirates.
the first LucasArts game?
Was it?
It was at the beginning of the LucasArts studios like history, but I don't know if it was their first or not, but I know those games are really well loved. I know that much.
Yeah, you can just see the kind of care that went into it, and the kind of HD remake version. It lets you switch between the original, like kind of engine and visuals and interface, to a kind of that remastered interface at any time. And it's even the littlest details they tried to preserve when remastering it. Like there's a bit in like a pub at the start, and there's three pirates at a table, and in the original pixel art, the mugs they have are really low detail, but on two of the pirates' mugs you can see a bit of foam coming over the top of like the grog that they drink, which is like lighter fluid and gasoline, shit, paint, or I so all these ridiculous ingredients, and then one of them has drank enough that the foam's not there, and the foam is only like one pixel tall, but in the HD remade visuals, they made sure that that same pirate doesn't have any foam coming out of his mug. Like they tried to preserve all those tiny little inconsequential things, so you can tell even like remaking it, they put the care into it. People love those games.
Yeah, that's cool.
So also just been replaying some Portal 2 with some Steam buddies. And but Portal 2 is Portal 2.
The co-op of Portal 2 is actually one of the more fun multiplayer experiences I've had. I played it with a roommate who wasn't really like into video games very much at all. Like I don't know, he just hadn't played very many video games in his life. And I didn't have anyone to play Portal 2 with, and so I asked him if he wanted to play, and he was like, "I guess." And I was really surprised, first of all, of how like easy it is for someone who doesn't know what Portal is, or even like is very familiar with like first-person shooter controls, to just get into it and play. And the amount of communication that you have to have with them to like set up some of the puzzles, they did a really good job with the co-op stuff. I was really
Yeah,
impressed.
the ping tool is
I
really
love
kind
that,
of
yeah.
underrated in how useful it is. But yeah, they added like some new levels. I don't know how long ago it was, but they added new official levels to the co-op in that game for free, I
Yeah,
think.
I think they have a they've got Steam Workshop support too, so you can just go through there and look at whatever you want to play. Probably like an
Nice.
infinite supply of levels.
Yeah, oh yeah, they made like a new map maker for it, right?
I don't know. It's so easy to make source stuff now that I think that they're like, whatever, it's moddable, so go for it.
Cool. Well, that's my week. Time to move on to news.
News. I
So what
have
do we got
news.
on the docket?
I put down that the Tomorrow Children alpha. I put alpha slash demo because it's really more of a demo than an alpha, and definitely more of a beta than an alpha. But I think they're calling it an alpha. And I'm pretty sure it was like closed, like it was only to people who got keys from a long time ago. But I wasn't able to play it, but I saw some gameplay of it. That game, conceptually and as far as its like presentation, it's a really cool game. And it'll
The Tomorrow
sound
Children.
yeah it'll sound less cool when I explain it than it looks, at least in my opinion. Because basically you can explain it by like You are an individual unit in an RTS kind of thing. That would be like, it's very derivative, but in a lot of ways, I think it's very true, because you've got kind of like a base that you're building and maintaining, and you have to go out and gather resources for it or stay in it and like play little mini games that like repair it and build stuff and whatever. And so you're just playing one person, and a bunch of other people are also building towards the progress of this base, and it's being attacked by like giant monsters, and you have to fight them off.
And this is PS4 only?
I don't know what systems it's on, actually. I don't think it's PS4 only, no. It might be. I think they first showed it at a Sony press conference, so maybe.
Right now it just looks like PS4.
Maybe. I for some reason I felt like it was coming out on PC, but whatever. It's it has kind of a minimalist art style, kind of, and also as far as like the characters go, they look like they're whittled out of wood. It's cool looking. And like the landscape though is like just a flat white world with like nothing in it except the things that you can interact with, and there's no music playing for most of it. So you're just like in this stark, quiet, like echoey kind of world, and it's there's like loudspeakers that are like shouting things, and like every time someone dies in the world, the loudspeakers will come up and say like, another comrade has sacrificed their life for the good of the town or something like that. And it's like, it's got like a really weird little style to it.
That's pretty cool.
And the way that, I don't know if I like this or not, but the way that like other players show up is kind of in a Dark Souls way, where they'll appear for a few seconds and then disappear, and you'll see whatever they're doing. But what they're doing will automatically update in the town. So like, there'll be like, okay, so like, say for example, a giant monster comes and attacks the town and they defeat it and it falls over. When it falls over, it becomes a resource and you can mine it. And it's not like you're clicking on it and getting a certain amount of resources. It's like you're actually like mining into it and creating little tunnels into it to gather its resources.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and everyone's doing that at the same time. So you can just see in the distance this fallen monster is like slowly getting chipped away at and they're gathering the resources. And then there's like a bus. I love this. There's like a little bus that will take you to and from the, I think they call them islands, like anything that has resources on it, which are pretty, they're not super far away from the town, but they're far away enough that you don't really want to walk. And also, I think if you try to walk to it, like you'll sink through the ground in a weird way, like you'll die trying to get to them without taking the bus or whatever. But people hop on the bus and like you can see the other players like waiting on the bus, and it'll take you to the little island, and everyone will get off and start mining, and then they'll put the resources on the bus as it comes back and take the bus back to the town and work on the town. Like, there's something about like the style of the game and the presentation and the bleakness of it. It's actually like, I think it's just really awesome. I hope it's fun to play. I have no idea because I haven't played it, unfortunately, but it looks really cool. You should look up some gameplay of it. It has some cool ideas, and it's in its most purest derivative kind of way, it is an RTS, survival RTS with Minecraft elements where you are a single unit. But that is being as,
check that out.
Yeah, that is being as simplistic as possible. It looks like it has some depth to it, and it's really cool, and the style of it is just awesome.
So you said something about it being like an alpha, so not everybody can play it right now.
I think it's closed to just people who have keys. I don't know how easy those would be to get, and it's probably over now too, because I saw it, like this was like at the beginning of last week, I think, when I saw it. So I don't know if it's still going on, but I saw about like 45 minutes of gameplay, and I was just like, I remember getting excited seeing the trailer for it at some conference. It looked really cool, but the trailer didn't really show what it was about at all. But then like seeing the gameplay, like the way that it's presented, the way that you come into this town and there's no music playing or anything, but you can, oh, and another cool thing, like the islands that are like a mile away, you can hear the explosions of like players using dynamite to mine it out and stuff. And it's just got the sound design is like echoey and bleak and really cool. You can just hear the distant like with like dynamite going off, and if you're on the island and a monster's attacking, you'll hear the battle going on at the distance, and it's cool. It's pretty awesome.
Well, I have the misfortune of owning a PS4.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll get a game or two soon.
Yeah, maybe.
But that sounds really cool. I can't wait to play that.
Yeah.
And so it looks like Sony Japan Studio was part of the development for that.
It was made in Japan, I heard. So yeah, I guess it is PS4. Weird.
Well, that does sound really cool.
Yeah. I'm probably gonna get a PS4 anyway, eventually. So I'll probably play it.
Yeah, you made the right decision though to
wait. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. It says initial release date August 12th, 2014.
That's not right.
On Google though, like it's the Google kind of automatic.
Yeah, that's like, not right. I think that was its. I think that was when the trailer was probably
when it was
revealed.
Announced. Yeah. Probably. Yeah, that's when it was unveiled at the conference. Yeah, there's no way it's out.
Yeah.
All right. So next, Far Cry 4.
Whew. Do you want me to talk about this one, or have you got it?
Are we going to talk about the leaked version?
I'd say we. Let's start out with the leaked version. I've got a little bit to say about the game.
Yeah, I haven't played the game yet, but basically, Ubisoft followed in the footsteps of the game dev tycoon guy who released the intentionally broken version on piracy websites. They did the same thing. And if you pirated the version of Far Cry 4 that they put out, then there would be no FOV slider in the game. And they were basically banking on people saying, hey, look, this game doesn't have an FOV slider. Well, let's look how broken the options are. And then someone from Ubisoft, do you know who it was specifically?
Like the creative director, someone high up. I don't know.
Yeah, someone's like, haha, Ubisoft, you fucking pirates. Like
the development team, I think. I don't think it was actually Ubisoft. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah. Well, who develops the game? Is it Ubisoft Montreal? Is that the sub studio?
Ubisoft's really weird, so I don't know. Ubisoft, I think, they do like everything internally, so it's like impossible to say like which studio is working on what. I think, but you're right. They're probably at Ubisoft and actually the developer of the game. I forget that Ubisoft isn't split like that. So,
well, yeah. Well, let's see. Do you have like the actual quote from him?
No,
Well, anyway, it was basically, haha, you dirty pirates,
scoundrels.
At the same time, though, it's so funny. It's so funny that they're, like, making a big, what do you call it?
Hullabaloo?
Who cares? Hullabaloo about something involving technical settings for their game when they just released a game that is broken to hell.
Yep.
Like, the nerve. Are you serious? And I know, if you pirate the game, piracy is a crime, and, you know, you shouldn't... It's not like you deserve a working game if you pirate it. It's just that they clearly spent some time doing this, releasing this different version. They had to compile a different executable and make a different game just to leak, and that's man hours that could have been spent, you know, not fucking their customers in the ass.
Well, here's what I think actually happened. I think that it was less intentional than they're letting on. I think that the FOV slider, I think it's confirmed that the FOV slider, the reason that it's in the full release and not the leaked release, is because there was a day one patch, and the day one patch added the FOV slider. So I think that it was
another reason that you want an always online system like Uplay, keeping the game up to date, right?
Yeah.
Fuck them.
And so I think what they've done is that they, like Ubisoft always does, they released a game that wasn't quite finished and then finished it up in the patch that they released on day one, which has become standard practice, and which I think is just indicative of a really shitty trend in the industry. But and then they realized that everyone who's still complaining about the FOV slider, they must be pirates. But here's the thing. Let's say that you're someone who wanted to play Far Cry 4 but hates fucking Uplay, like I do. And so you bought, I don't know, I don't even know if they fucking sell a physical copy of Far Cry 4. But if they do, or if they don't, either way, let's say you bought it and then you put Uplay in offline mode to play it. And so you don't get the patch, which seems like a reasonable thing to do since literally the less than a week before its release, that was what Ubisoft was telling people to do with their other game that came out and was shitty, which was Assassin's Creed Unity. They said, oh, you want higher frame rate? Just disconnect your fucking internet to get our game to work, because our fucking shitty DRM is causing our game to fuck up. And the only way to fix it is to manually disconnect our DRM from the internet so that you can play our game. So it seems reasonable that people might, you know, disconnect their internet when they play Far Cry 4 so that they think that they have the highest frame rate possible. And then you accuse them of piracy? Because you released a broken-ass game that leads people to do something that looks like piracy? And even if it is piracy, you have the audacity to complain about people pirating your game when less than a week before you released a game that was so fucking broken that you had to tell them to disconnect from the internet just to play it in single player mode. I mean, like, oh my god, just Ubisoft, just it's a weekly thing now where they're just fucking up PR wise and technical difficulties, and just it's so constant. And the fact that they come out and they like smugly say, oh well, we caught you, you're filthy pirates, like they are not in a position to point fingers at people. Like, no, they should be in complete defensive mode right now. They shouldn't be offensively attacking people, especially people who might be paying customers who aren't pirates, because they didn't think through the fact that maybe people didn't download the fucking patch. Oh god, it just drives me crazy.
Okay, so I guess, hold on, I want to make sure not to say stupid shit that's wrong. So it looks like they probably didn't leak it intentionally from what I can see, but they're just using it as an opportunity to expose pirates. And from this article I'm reading, Ubisoft CEO said in 2012, quote, normally on PC it's only about 5-7% who pay anyway, the rest is pirated.
I remember that.
it's around a 93-95% piracy rate. Fuck you.
Can you imagine how deluded you have to be? I don't know if he believes that or if he just wants other people to believe that, but just, like, you can't possibly believe that to be true.
It's just not true. How would you know?
Like, that's the around the percentage of people that apparently pay for free-to-play games. And so, like, to transfer that kind of ratio over to just piracy is ridiculous. Like, that's... And yeah, how would you possibly know? And, like, and the thing is, like, we know, you can go on Pirate Bay and look at the number of copies that are pirated, because it'll give you I think Pirate Bay gives you a statistic of how many times it's been downloaded, which isn't, you know, it's not the full amount of copies that have been downloaded, but I would say that it'd be the majority of them, and you could estimate maybe like, oh, I don't know, 75% of them were from Pirate Bay, and then you can compare that with the sales numbers, and I mean, obviously you'll see that it doesn't compare to the sales number in that way. Like, it's just so easy to debunk, and you don't need to look at the statistics because it's such a ridiculous thing to try to even put forward. Like,
right.
Oh, Ubisoft is crazy. Oh.
They sure are the model publisher right now. If you want to fuck up, just look to them. They're your sterling example.
Like, they have blown EA out of the water for the last couple years. Like, and that's saying something, because EA just, they were, a few years ago, EA was, it was hard to imagine that anyone could be worse, but Ubisoft, they tried their damn hardest, and I think they've succeeded.
Yeah. I mean, they're, not that any of these game publishers should be winning worse company awards in these polls.
No, obviously
it's
not,
just,
but...
It's just gamers, like, voting because they care about video games more than anything else. But, you know, EA has competition, or it's not even competition. It's going to be a blowout.
Although I still think that I don't know what time of year they do those or whatever. I don't know when the next one's coming up, but I feel like it's tradition at this point to vote for EA. I don't know if people are going to be willing to change to Ubisoft just because EA's won like 3 or 4 years now in a row, and like they feel like, yep, we got to keep giving it to EA, even though I really don't think EA would come close to deserving it, even if it was just for the game industry. But yeah, that's funny shit. And speaking of Far Cry 4, I haven't played it either. I've seen some gameplay footage of it. It looks fine. It literally is just Far Cry 3 with some more stuff in it. But I'm fine with that. Like, at least as long as they don't try to annualize that concept, that's whatever. Fine. But and they might definitely try to annualize it as they have with Assassin's Creed. But there was one thing about Far Cry 4 that I noticed that I could not get away from this. And normally I don't care about this kind of thing at all, but the textures of the rock faces in that game, and there's a lot of rock faces, and you get really close to them because there's like a rock climbing kind of element to it. They are flat and low res on the highest settings. They look
cool.
Awful. Terrible. They're not tessellated or anything. And like, it's noticeable in the rock faces because like on the normal ground, like in the jungle and stuff, there's so much grass and stuff on the ground that it looks fine. It actually looks really good. But then you get to the rock face and they just haven't done anything to try to make it look any better than what probably the stuff under the grass looks like. And the fact that you're right up there, like your face is like facing it from 2 inches away because you're rock climbing. I don't know how they just didn't do anything about that. It looks ridiculous, but no, that doesn't say anything about the game as a whole, but I just couldn't get past it. Like, I kept on looking at it like, holy shit, that is so bad. I don't have a lot to say about Far Cry 4, though. I wanted to get that out of my system.
Yeah. In that case, we can move on to some happier news with a happier game. Smash Brothers Wii U.
Woo!
Have you played it yet? Have you played the 3DS or Wii U version?
Haven't played a Smash Brothers game since Melee, and I didn't play that much of Melee. So, no.
Oh, that's a shame. I've been playing the 3DS version a lot, and it's really just been getting me more pumped for like the Wii U version.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the perfect teaser, and oh my god, I cannot wait to play that game on Wii U. Holy shit. They're also adding, I guess we didn't really talk about this yet on the show, but it's not exactly this week's news, but they're going to be adding Mewtwo as a character to the game, a playable character in like DLC. Do we know if it's paid or free at this point?
I would assume it's free by the way that I've seen it like hyped. I have no idea though, and I don't know how Nintendo normally does that kind of thing, but I feel like Nintendo's not the kind of company that releases little chunks of DLC and stuff like very often, so I don't know if they would try to make you pay for it.
Yeah, not that you should ever trust you know, IGN ratings for the quality of games, but I think they gave the 3DS version something in the 8s, and their rating for the Wii U version is a 9.8. So,
whoa.
Jesus. You can't, you know, they're numerical ratings of a video game review site. You can't put that much stock in it. But 9.8 is high for even these kinds of publications. And it's not surprising, because from the 3DS version, it feels like this kind of slightly watered down, amazing game.
Which is what it is.
Yeah, it doesn't really feel that good. It feels good, but it kind of feels strange to play on a small screen with a tiny little dinky control pad and without a C-stick. And, you know, it works. It functions. It's fun. But it's really just, it's almost like Ground Zeroes. It's like Ground Zeroes getting you hyped for the Phantom Pain. That's what the 3DS version for Smash Bros. Is like. Except, you know, it's a much more similar experience to what the final thing is going to be.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a Wii U, and I haven't played Nintendo games all my life, pretty much. Like, I had a Nintendo 64, but I didn't even have that many games for it, so it's hard for me to get excited for it. Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of something I always kind of missed out on Nintendo stuff.
There's never a better time, because now, like, Nintendo is the only, I think, yeah, they're the only console now that actually gives a shit about backward compatibility. Like, there's perfect 100% backward compatibility to Wii on Wii U.
And they actually have games. GameCube.
Yeah, they have games on all of it. The 3DS is completely compatible with the original DS. They actually care about doing at least one generation of perfect backward compatibility. It's nice, and you feel like you're being taken care of, but they still they tie your purchases to your physical console.
They still fuck you.
Yeah, they
fuck you, but they say sweet nothings in your ear while they do it.
Exactly. But there's like Wonderful 101, Bayonetta 2, all these good games on Wii U, Super Mario 3D World.
It's a good console. I like Nintendo as a company, they're so weird. The way that they do everything is completely bizarre, and like, they just spend a lot of time doing like PR stuff, and like they do, like, I think it's, is it a weekly or monthly Nintendo Direct? How often do they do those, or is it just a random?
I don't know. They release one whenever they have something to say.
They love doing those Nintendo Directs, even when they don't have a lot to say, and they're so bizarre. Like, I've watched them just like, I don't understand what goes through their head when they're making them, but I love them. They're lovable. They're a lovable company, and that's kind of weird to say about a major game company, but yeah, there's something to really like about Nintendo, and I should get a Wii U eventually. There's a few games I'd really like to play on it.
Now, I went to Nintendo World in New York City a few years ago around Christmas time, and the coolest thing I have to talk about this. It's called Mario Live, and it's like this kind of augmented reality kind of screen, and you stand in front of it, and like Mario talks to you. You see the character Mario, and you hear the voice, and it's actually Charles Martinet talking to you remotely. It was so cool.
Like, that's bizarre. I
was just fucking talking to Mario. That is so cool. And he was like commenting on my shirt. It's like, so cool.
Oh my
and
God,
I didn't believe. I thought it was just somebody who was really good at like doing the impression.
Sure, yeah.
But I looked it up. I checked again just before I said it to make sure I wasn't bullshitting. But nope, it apparently Charles Martinet around July and Christmas every year does this Mario Live thing remotely and just talks to people.
That's incredible.
It's so cool.
So you have literally had a conversation with Mario. You can say that to people and
yes,
say it
I
honestly.
Yep.
That's really dumb and really cool.
It's really cool though. It's amazing. You just walk in the store and you talk to Mario.
Oh man, that's oof.
Yeah. Anyway.
Moving on. There's a Game of Thrones video game coming out. I'm not mistaken, it is Telltale, right?
Yes, it's Telltale.
I don't know what that's gonna be. I guess it's gonna be a Telltale game that tells Game of Thrones stories. I don't know if it's gonna be like the actual Game of Thrones plot.
It's gonna be 6 episodes, I think. And what I noticed from that teaser is that there are a lot of characters from the show with the
In
actual
fact, it seems almost entirely made up of the characters from the show.
Like, it's definitely not like The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead kind of, those games followed the comics continuity, and the only character that was in the other media was Herschel and Glenn. And they were really only in like the first episode, and then after that it was all their own characters, and even then those characters were like they were in the comic, not the show, so completely different appearance, not the same voice at all. It was very much a separate thing. This, it is absolutely the HBO Game of Thrones in Telltale style. It's not like a Telltale Song of Ice and Fire. it's Game of Thrones Telltale. And I don't
I
know.
wonder if there's going to be like splitting path decisions and stuff. Because like if they're telling the Game of Thrones story, there's only so much you can do.
Well, for Telltale games, I've never been crazy about the choices are important, but not because they create a different narrative. They kind
Right.
of subtly alter the details and they change the tone of what happens and how you feel about certain characters, which I think is more important than changing the outcome. Because if you look at season two of The Walking Dead, they made a branching ending and there was a whole bunch wrong with it that Flimsy could tell you more about than I could. You could feel it at the end. The ending was weak. It was weak as fuck. I forgot about it immediately after playing it. And it's because good endings feel inevitable. They feel like there was no, even if you weren't expecting it, because you probably shouldn't be expecting it, but it feels once it happens that there was no other way that story could go. That is where that story was going the whole time, and you can feel everything kind of come together. It makes sense. It feels inevitable. And that's not true at all for The Walking Dead season two. They have these branching endings. It feels like a choose your own adventure book, and that's weak. That's some weak shit. So I hope that they just make a strong story. I'm not into the whole your choices will have rippling consequences. That's Telltale's problem though, because they advertise their stuff as having these branching paths, but I'm not crazy about the branching paths, and they don't, in truth, even branch the paths that much, except Walking Dead season two, and that sucked.
What do you think of, like, just from the small bit we've seen, what do you think about the art style?
Well, it looks kind of ugly.
Yeah.
It's like more realistic almost than most other Telltale games, and their engine cannot do it. You
Yeah,
can
and you
see it
say, and
buckling under the weight of
it's
this
more
realistic
realistic, but it
aesthetic.
still
It's
doesn't
not
feel
really
like
working. It's very
it
kind of
doesn't feel like
low
it's.
detail, sort of painterly, but really just kind of muddy.
Yeah.
They said that they're going for painterly, and
I see that. I get the here's the impression I get. I feel like it's more realistic than The Walking Dead, but the biggest change and the biggest thing that makes it look weird to me is the fact that they just removed the cel shading. And so it kind of has a comic book. It's like it started trying to look like a comic book, and then they said, "Wait a minute, let's take out the cel shading." And then it's in the uncanny valley kind of. It just doesn't. It doesn't. I don't like it. And I like the way that The Walking Dead, their Walking Dead looks. I've always liked it, and I've heard a lot of people kind of complain about it a little bit. But I always thought it looked fantastic. Like the 3D but kind of 2D looking nature of it. I really like it. But this, they've tried to go in a different direction. And I guess you're right. I guess they're trying to use the same engine, and maybe that's the reason it looks so weird. Maybe they're looking as realistic as they can with the engine that they have. I don't know, but
I think they need a new engine by this point. I mean, they've got Tales from the Borderlands, which,
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ, I'm not
Why?
looking forward to that.
Who has ever played a Borderlands game and said, "I want to do more
I
with
want
this
more of the
setting"?
story.
The
Yeah.
this story, this setting, these characters, they're so good, they need to be fleshed out. The
Handsome
only
Jack,
reason
baby, the best character ever conceived, right? He's so zany and has all kinds of zany catchphrases to say at you.
The
Fuck.
only reason that they're making that game is because both of them are cel-shaded games. That is, I can't think
Oh,
of
they're
any
not.
other reason.
This is just the kind of, I don't know, n something geek in me. But technically, that's not cel shading. Cel shading is
Whatever.
when there's like defined cells, like in The Wind Waker, where like
All
they
right.
only have certain binary shading values and they're def like set and defined. So I guess you're more describing like thick outlines and kind of general
Yeah.
cartoon lighting. But I don't know. I feel like that's not just to be a shitty stickler over it for correctness purposes, but games that do actual cel shading, like Ni No Kuni, they kind of deserve the credit that they get for that kind of thing, because that takes a lot of effort and it winds up looking
Well,
really, really good.
I'm one of those people that thinks that Wind Waker is one of the best looking games like ever made. I played it for the first time maybe a year ago and loved it. Like I that game the way that they the art direction that they went with that game means that it will never look like an old game ever. Like, it looks fantastic. I love the look of it. I don't know how people I do know how people can dislike it. It's because they were Zelda fans, and then that came out and they said, oh, it's too cartoony. But fuck them, because it looks fantastic. I love that game. It looks so good.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like, you can see it. If you look at the difference between the original Wind Waker and Wind Waker HD, Wind Waker HD is a lighting engine that's trying to look cel-shaded.
Yeah.
And you can tell the difference.
Like, yeah, you can.
Link will have a region on his clothes that in a particular set of light will have this color. And for cel-shading, they have to manually define all that. And in a lighting engine, they just kind of let the light go places, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So
and they didn't need to make an HD release of it, because like I said, it just raise the resolution and it looks perfect. It looks fine.
Yeah, in Dolphin, wow, it looks so good in Dolphin.
Yeah,
they just needed the gameplay changes, well, some of them, but you know, if I talked any more about this, I would just be paraphrasing Matthew Matosas.
Does he do a video about it?
Yeah, he did. He did. I think he did a full Wind Waker HD review. I know at least he did a review of the Wind Waker that maybe talked about both, but I think he also did a specific one about the HD version.
Yeah,
and yeah, he talked a lot about this. But if you like the cel shading art style, I definitely recommend Ni No Kuni for the PS3. Like, Studio Ghibli did all the 2D cutscenes in that, and they were kind of really involved in the art direction of the whole rest of the game. It's a gorgeous game, and it's manually cel-shaded like the good old days.
Yeah,
that was never really a standard, but
right. I'm gonna have to check that out.
But yeah, I'm not really excited for Game of Thrones. I have the whole last season of Game of Thrones sitting on my computer. I only watched like 3 episodes, and it just kind of wore out.
It's running
out of steam.
The last one is? Yeah, it's slow. It's slower than the other ones, especially when it goes to like, what's her name? Khaleesi. Khaleesi.
Daenerys Targaryen. Some people name their fucking kids Khaleesi. That's her title. People. It's not her name. Fuck you.
Anyway, I would put it, I don't know, I don't remember all that well because I've kind of watched them split up, but I from what I remember, the last season is as good as the ones before it. Like, I would say it's on par. And there's a few moments that are just like, watch a couple more episodes and there's probably at least one moment in those next few episodes where something will happen where you'll go, holy fucking shit, and you'll have to keep watching.
Okay.
That has more of those kinds of moments. So, yeah, keep watching it.
Like, I just hope that for the game, they don't rely too much on the actual actors and actresses. Like,
I mean, they've got what's his name in it? They've got the dwarf.
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. Like, it's just him.
He was... A lot of people hated on him in Destiny, but I thought it was okay.
I haven't played Destiny, but from what I've watched of it, from what I've heard of him, I don't understand the complaints, except the fact that, I mean, yeah, he's kind of a little dull.
He's
maybe
not
especially
memorable.
Yeah, like,
you, he's
like,
good, he's just not like,
if you compare
Cortana.
Them to Cortana or Guilty Spark, like, Guilty Spark was a great character.
God,
with, like,
Guilty Spark.
It, really interesting voice acting, and like, it was a fun character. But if they try to do that again, you don't want to draw too many comparisons to a good character, you know, because then they'll just be
Guilty
compared
Spark
to that
would have been a really annoying good. Guilty Spark would have been a really annoying companion.
Oh, it would have been awful.
If,
yeah,
if Guilty Spark was talking to you the whole time, it would have
definitely
been bad. But the problem was that the ghost in Destiny was like the only other character that you had any kind of meaningful interaction with that lasted more than like a few seconds, or was just kind of generic. Like, thank you for bringing me material X.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just some flavorful nonsense in the background that you overhear, like characters talking to one another. Like, there's no... Yeah, it would have been annoying to have a personality that big with you all the time.
Right.
But if that's the only personality in your game is the kind of serviceable companion who tells you things, then you're don't have a recipe for success, but that's Destiny.
I think that's the issue, is that it's not with Peter Dinklage, which I think is what a lot of reviewers kind of harped on, but it's the fact that Peter Dinklage is the only person in the game, the only one that says more dialogue than a few lines. And so that's the problem. But the role that he fills in the game, which isn't just, well, it is, it's plot exposition and stuff, but the way that he's saying it, the way that he's voice acting, I think is fine. And to me, it looked like it really fit the atmosphere of the game. Like,
it did.
He had kind of the way that he spoke to me was actually like really fitting with the mysterious kind of nature of the game and the kind of emptiness of the world. I liked it a lot. I don't know how I would feel after playing for 30 hours.
It's still a fun game. It's got great gunplay and it feels good, but by the end of the story, because it really barely has one, but by the end of your time playing it until you eventually put it down, you start to feel like all of this is just cryptic bullshit that sucks. just any of the lore, you know, the Traveler's Light, and they have all these super interesting things that they just don't explain at all or give you backstory. Even like the backstory flavor text of item descriptions and stuff, even that, like in Dark Souls or something, the item descriptions would give you kind of concrete details about characters and events that you could kind of string together into a backstory. And Destiny, its descriptions are just more cryptic bullshit. And there's another character in that game, like this kind of roguish guardian who's like this can-do chick who's way ahead of you and is kind of watching you from the shadows and seeing your progress. But even by the end, I still have no idea who the fuck she is. You don't see her face. I mean, she's kind of there. She maybe had like 2 minutes consecutively of dialogue. If you smash it all together, everything she says in the game is probably like 2 minutes of speech. And she is the only other major character in the game. She speaks the second most in the entire game, and the first is Peter Dinklage's ghost.
It's a huge shame, because one of the things that I really, really loved about Halo 3 was actually like a really small part of it that I feel was just like probably one random person's idea that somehow he had convinced someone to put in the game, and they didn't spend all that much time on it, but I'm so glad they did it. The terminals in Halo 3,
God,
have you ever read them?
So cool!
They are,
yes!
They're the best part of the game. They're amazing. They add so much to the world, and they're so well done. Just like the whole process of getting into the terminal and like seeing it like browse through the archives and then choose something and then translate it and reading the conversation between the librarian and the didact and all that stuff. The thing is, I think they tried to invoke that in Destiny, but they did it through the wrong means, which was instead of...
I could tell that they had their 10-year plan and no. They didn't want to blow their load.
that's part of it, I think.
Yeah. They made the opposite mistake of giving us like nothing.
Yeah. Well,
us names and cool sounding locations.
With the terminals, they kind of told a huge story through one, two, or three perspectives, the AI and the two Forerunner. And so it was kind of they were telling a really small story as a small part of a larger story, but you still get the larger story. You still get the story of the Forerunner, but you get it from a single person's perspective, from a personal perspective, even if it's an AI, you get it from a personal perspective. And so it's way more engaging. And it's also just way easier to understand when you're reading about it. If you're reading it from someone's perspective rather than just like a robot saying, oh, these were the wizards who came from the moon and they did this and da 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 da. And you're not getting a personal perspective of it, and you're not getting a firsthand account of it or anything. It's literally just exposition. And so I feel like they had the right idea, but they went about it in the worst possible way. It's like reading a Wikipedia article instead of the original book that the article is about, you know? It's like reading a synopsis.
Yeah, it's, you know, Destiny. That's Destiny.
I hope
everybody knows by now. It's I'm hopeful, though. I think they'll learn their lesson. There's much money on the line for them not to.
Like, yeah. We know they're a really good studio, and we know they have the potential to actually write some really interesting stuff, even if people just say that Halo is a space marine story about a space marine fighting aliens, which it is in its simplest form. But if you read those terminals, like, fucking, if you're listening to this right now and you're at all, if you've ever played Halo, go on, I don't know, Google Halo 3 terminals and read the original text from the terminals just in order. There's only like 7 of them, I think. And you'll get, like, you'll realize that there's way more going on with Halo's universe than they ever even scratched the surface of in the main, like, plot of the game. And it's really interesting stuff. It's really well done. And there's some person who's a really good writer at Bungie who probably isn't utilized anywhere near to their full potential if they were the ones that wrote those terminals, because damn.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that somehow we've got on that tangent. Well, I know how we got on it.
Yeah, Game of Thrones. Not too excited for the game. I'll play it probably, though.
I'm more excited for it than any other Telltale game, so I don't know. It'll probably be the first Telltale game that I ever really play, so yay.
Definitely worth playing Wolf Among Us.
I know. I need to. It looks really interesting, but anyway.
That's great.
So Dragon Age Inquisition, you talk about this first.
Okay, so I played Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2. Everybody kind of knows the general consensus on these. Dragon Age Origins was good. Dragon Age 2 really kind of wasn't. And Dragon Age Inquisition is coming out, or already came out.
Came out,
the
yeah.
18th. And I was going to play it, but after having been burned with Fallen, I wanted to try it before I bought it, and I legally purchased both other games in the series. And after that kind of breach of trust with 2, I was going to pirate it before I purchased it. And I went to, and it's got that de novo DRM that Lords of the Fallen has, and that's not that big a deal. All it means is I'm not going to play the game at all. But de novo it still hasn't been cracked for Dragon Age Inquisition or Lords of the Fallen yet. Apparently, it's dangerous to use with SSDs because it increases the number of read-write operations while playing the game by 10,000 times. And you can literally just kill your SSD because SSDs have a finite number of writes that you can perform on them. And so, you know, you're constantly burning through them, but normally you're doing it very, very slowly. De novo is constantly writing shit, and it can really mess up your solid state drive. So that's, you know, security, yeah.
Buyer beware.
At what cost? And what this means, like, maybe some pirates aren't as ethical as me, but I'm very, very consistent about purchasing games that I liked through piracy. All this means is that I'm not going to give them any money at all for the game, because who in their right mind would just buy a game now? It sounds so weird to say that, but why would you ever do that? Why would you ever just buy a video game? Why would you buy a video game from a developer/publisher who has a record of fucking up? If it's something like From Software, I'll probably buy the next thing they make. Because even Dark Souls 2, it's their worst game in a while, is still really good.
I got a ton of enjoyment out of it. Hugely disappointing, but I got a ton of enjoyment out of it, and I would have bought it.
Right.
Yeah, if I don't really pirate just because I'm too lazy, really. But I would have bought it after pirating it because I put a lot of hours into it. I enjoyed it, even though I was hugely disappointed with it.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'll probably buy, I'm going to buy Bloodborne when it comes out just because I want my PS4 to have a function. But, I mean, I won't do it to every developer, but at some point, my trust in publishers and developers, like any sane person's, has completely evaporated. I can't expect to just buy a game and get my money's worth And you can't do that. And that's been true basically forever. I mean, most NES games were absolute shit. And most games are just shit anyway. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just too ethical and maybe most people don't do this. But the only. They didn't gain anything by having de novo on their game, or at least not in my case. It did effectively prevent me from pirating the game, but it also is the sole reason I'm not purchasing it.
What you're saying is, and I agree with this completely. You're saying the DRM, the only thing that that's doing is stopping pirates who otherwise might buy the game in the future from buying the game at all. Because here's the thing about
Right.
piracy: people talk about it as in it's lost sales. But I think that that's such a small percentage of the people who are actually pirating the game. Because I think the reason that people usually pirate games is because they have a very, very small passing interest in the game and they want to try it out. But they don't want to spend $60 for something that they don't know that they're going to put a lot of hours into. I don't think that the majority of them do what you do, which is buy the game after they start enjoying it. But I also don't think that any of them are going to buy the game if they can't pirate it.
Well,
And so I don't think it's a lost sale because they're not buying the game anyway. They're never going to buy the game.
I've heard of some others, of a lot of others using them piracy as sort of a de facto demo. But
Sure.
it's even better than a demo because in demos you see exactly what the developer wants you to see, and it can be a highly polished experience that's bug-free if it's a demo. And the rest of the game might not necessarily be like that. Piracy, you get to try the full thing. It is illegal. I'm not gonna deny that. And there are games that I've pirated and not purchased, but I use it as a way to try before I buy.
Yeah.
And I hope other people do too, but you're right. There are probably more people just using it as, I'm not really interested in this game at all enough to
Yeah.
pay $60 for it, but I'm interested enough to spend a few hours of my life downloading it and seeing what it's like. So
Yeah.
I
I
don't
don't know.
know.
I don't
But
think.
the big deal to me is that it's actually dangerous for your drives.
Yep.
Like, holy shit.
It's not the
What the
first.
fuck?
It's not the first time either. I don't remember the name of it, but there was some DRM thing that was going around like a little less than a decade ago, I think. And I
Secure ROM?
that was it. Secure ROM. Holy fucking shit. That like reading about that and like how much it can fuck up like everything and how many games kept on using it after it was like widely known how terrible it was. Like, oh my God, it's so crazy that like I remember when DRM was first becoming a thing and everyone was freaking out about it and like talking about how it's going to be the end of everything and just doomsday kind of shit. But like they were
Oh,
totally right, totally 100%
you
right.
know
Like
what?
everything that we ever feared about DRM has come true.
You know what? This is hilarious and totally expected. Denuvo is the new company formed from a management buyout of the Sony DADC Digital Works team, the team that developed best-of-breed copy protection systems like Secure ROM for games.
Yep, of
Completely
course.
predictable.
Of fucking
Wow.
course. Great. I'm really
The
glad you
same
researched that
crack
because that's
team,
perfect. I
the crack team that brought you Secure ROM brings you this piece of
Oh,
shit that'll fry your SSD.
that's hilarious. It's tragic.
It's the way that it's different from most other copyright protection is that it kind of, I'm not an expert, but it's checking while the game is running, not just before. And it like performs read-write operations to do that, but it performs so many that it can really degrade block performance on SSDs.
Yeah.
That's just broken.
Yep.
In fact, I'm pretty sure that would be a reason you could sue
I think
if you buy
potentially.
if you get it. I mean, that's an actual like issue. If you have software that damages your machine, and if that is true of everyone with the software, that's an actual problem,
I think a lot
an
of the
actual legal
times,
problem.
I mean, I'm not super aware of the details of this, but I think a lot of times in their terms of service, they'll put clauses that say things like, this software could be potentially damaging to your computer and you're accepting the risks involved or whatever, you know?
But, so, that's like, the beautiful thing about those agreements is that they don't actually matter.
They really don't. Yeah.
In all cases, you actually can. It doesn't, like, you can say, you can have in a license agreement, like, you forfeit all rights to sue. That can be in the text of the agreement, and it still doesn't matter.
In fact, that often is. Like, if they...
If a judge thinks that damages occurred, that's fine. It's totally okay. All it would take is convincing a judge and getting some kind of class action thing together.
But that takes money and time, and nobody wants to do it.
But people have done the same thing with, like, Apple before for some pretty minor defects on, like, some iPod Nanos or something. Yeah. I think it's doable. You'd probably get one of these... change.org or what, these consumer rights basically vultures, you would get them kind of rallying for you. And
yeah, I think I got, because
there's
like
profit,
15
there's
cents
profit
for
in
something.
There's profit in suing these people. Like, that's the good part about it, is that sometimes you can get these predatory lawyers working for the consumer, because there's sometimes profit in working for the consumer.
Yay. Is there anything else to talk about?
Not really. Not in terms of news. I think we got a question or two, though.
Yay, questions. All right.
All right. This question, it's actually a few questions from Colm. Do you guys have a favorite game mode that allowed for user-generated content, such as map editors or photo modes? I really enjoyed the Forge mode in Halo Reach a while back.
That's a really good
question.
Does
anything really compare to Forge?
I'll go first. First of all, does anything really compare to Forge? Yes and no, I think. I think Forge is by far the best implementation of, like, map editing and game mode making in, like, mainstream console kind of shooter. Like, there's not really a good comparison. Like, there, nothing else has does it to such an accessible level. Right. Like, Source, you can do a whole lot more with Source than you can with Forge, but you're gonna have to learn
hammer up
and... exactly, you're gonna have to learn how to do it. It's a huge undertaking. But Forge, I mean, you can just jump right in there and start making shit. I mean, it's really well done. Like, actually, what they did with Forge is so underrated. Like, I'm really sad that people, not more people, I feel like not enough people took advantage of Forge, although there were some really cool stuff made in it.
Did Halo 4 have Forge?
I'm not sure. I think so, but it was probably quite different because everything else in that game was. Their multiplayer was probably, I want to say their multiplayer was probably less customizable because it seemed to me like there were less game modes and stuff, but I can't say. But, I mean, Halo, it's known for this, but, like, the amount of game modes and the amount of customization, even from the first game, which if you look at the games around it that were coming out at that time, it's amazing the amount of variety that you can put into those games. Just right from the menu, you can say, like, oh, I want 250% shields, and I want, you know, to spawn with rocket launchers, or have this many warthogs on the map and this game mode, and I want to have like a rally. You can, like, mix and match game modes and shit. Like, I mean, just crazy stuff that you could do with the first Halo. Like, that was really impressive stuff.
Yeah.
So I would say that, first of all, I would say that Halo has the most impressive of what that question is referring to. Also, Far Cry 1 on the Xbox 360, Far Cry Instincts, that was it, was the 360 version. I think it was different from the PC version, but... it had a really good map editor, and I think you could kind of make your own game modes in a way. I don't know, it wasn't as good as, like, Halo's Forge, but the things that people did with it, like, I spent more time going through maps and looking at what people did with it, and it was really entertaining, the kinds of things that people would make, and it was all up to the users, but they did some really clever stuff with it, and I kind of miss that, and I wish that they would. I don't think Far Cry 4 has that either. They still have a map editor, but I don't think they have the stuff that you could do with it, like adding vehicles and stuff. There just isn't as much of that in Far Cry anymore. So,
Yeah, Forge is my winner there too. I mean, you obviously, there's some great stuff made, like Hammer for Source stuff. But as far as like a game mode or like an option in a game to make custom stuff, I don't think anything scrapes close to Forge and what Bungie did with Halo.
Although you could say like Gary's mod, especially with like Wire. I don't know if you ever used Wire mod in Gary's mod.
I have. But yeah. Even that to me, like that feels like a game that's based on Sandbox. Like the only thing it has is the customization.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's the whole.
There's no goal
gimmick
to
or
it.
Draw. Right. Like Halo, three especially. It was in the others too, but 3 really did it with Forge and everything. That was a mode in a much bigger game that had other things to do and a vanilla kind of multiplayer mode to kind of build it from. So yeah, that's kind of.
So yeah, simple answer, no, nothing compares to Forge. Forge blows them all out of the water, I think.
And there's actually 3 parts to this question, but that's fine because it's the only one we received this week. So the next question is, have either of you attempted creating a mod for a game?
Oh,
I know my
man.
Answer, but I'll let you go first.
I would say no, I haven't given it a true attempt. I have fired up Hammer and messed around with it, and I didn't know at all what I was doing. I had really high ambitions, though, for a Counter-Strike map. I think probably everyone in the world has had these kinds of ambitions at some point to make a map. I wanted to make a Counter-Strike map that was either a really simplified small version of my neighborhood or a really detailed version of my house. I really, because like my house that I had at the time was like, honestly, it was a perfect first-person shooter. Like I still, even to this day, like I just got a job like a week ago and I walk into the office and one of my first thoughts was, this would be a fucking fantastic Counter-Strike map. I got like, oh, bomb point here, here's where the terrorists fall. I think of that shit to this day. And my house was one of those that would have just been perfect. Just like the way that the walls are laid out and stuff is perfect for like cover and gunfights and camping and all that stuff. But no, I never got around to it. The answer is no.
I tried creating a Source mod once, but I was like 12 and I didn't know how to actually even get it to work at all, much less mod anything. But like when I was 14, I ran a jailbreak server for Counter-Strike
Source.
Yeah. And you know, it was basically exactly what you'd expect, but what I noticed was that, and this is still true of jailbreak everywhere, is that it's boring as shit and it kind of goes in the same way every time. And I decided that I wanted a map that was kind of more chaotic. It was just more happening. So I took the BA electric jail map with the cage in the middle and the garage and everything, and I just modified the shit out of it. And I added like all these secret compartments with like invisible walls and teleporters and kind of adding little mazes and labyrinths that you could break through, and like one would teleport you up into this invisible loft that had a Desert Eagle with like just 3 shots in it or something. Like I really spent time making this, and it was a confusing as shit map, but it was really fun because we didn't have that many people on the server, so everybody I was able to tell everybody about what was on the map. So it made for a lot more fun games, less just waiting around for nothing to happen. And then a little later than that, like in high school, like junior year of high school, so what was that, like when I was 16 or so, I was making this game. I don't know why exactly. I think it's because I just saw Super Meat Boy or something. And I was like, yeah, I want to do that too. And so I started trying to learn how to program just to make a game. And I got okay. Like I made sure I did my reading. I tried to learn all the basics of programming in C++. And then when I heard that XNA libraries were pretty good for that kind of thing, I started learning my C#. And I got a working prototype working. of an engine that I made myself. You were this little yellow guy named Grubby, and you would kind of jump around. And it never became anything. I don't have the files anymore, but it was really cool because it's a whole new appreciation for it, because you can't just make stuff jump. You can't just, now you just have it jump. To make it feel right, you kind of have to make an equation that determines like the kind of velocity of the jump. So you kind of have gravity affect it so that you accelerate as you fall. You don't just kind of fall in a linear path and you kind of jump up quickly and then you get slower at the top. Like it's kind of changing these little things and you're like, wow, how the fuck do they do things more complicated than jumping? Like, there's so much that would just take ages to learn, and it's not, I don't want to be a game designer at all, so it's not something I would bother learning more about, but it was a really good experience. It gave me a lot greater appreciation for.
I've never had any even remote interest in programming, but I know the I've had enough experience with like WireMod, for example. I created some fairly complicated stuff in WireMod. I created this like hoverboard kind of thing that was ideal, that it would ideally stay like level with the ground, but in a way that it actually kind of like looks like it was hovering rather than just a flat platform exactly 3 feet off the ground. Like it would actually like, if you put something on top of it would actually like buckle under the weight a little bit. And I spent so much time like messing with the conditionals and all that stuff on WireMod to make things like that, and it was a lot of fun, and it was really satisfying when you finally get something right, and it creates like a small effect that you really like. I made another thing that would follow
God,
me
yes.
around on the map. It was supposed to follow me around on the map, and so I had to make like a statement that said like, okay, if it's within 10 feet of me, I want it to not move at all, so that it looks like it's just kind of chilling next to me. But if I move away, it needs to follow me, but not in an unnatural looking way. So you have to like go in there and actually like figure out, how do I make this look natural where it's not just always pointed directly at me? Like make the thrusters weak enough for it to kind of struggle to turn with me a little bit. And then like if I'm far away enough from it, I gave it a little rocket booster that would turn on if I was far away enough, that would make it go even far faster and like catch up to me quicker. And like, it was so satisfying getting that stuff to work, and having it actually like seeing the results in the game right there. But I don't ever want to have to learn to code and like do all that shit. Like that's way beyond anything that I'm interested in.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's so much work just to do anything. Like one of the problems I ran into was that, when the level when you would start, getting levels to even exist or be a thing was also difficult. But the character would spawn in and just fall right to the ground and just. I'm like, oh, okay, I have to make these things collide with each other somehow and know when to stop. And I'm like, what the fuck? How do I do that? So, yeah, it's not easy. And that's kind of why I stopped, because it's not easy. But yeah, it was a very valuable experience, though.
Yeah, and I my family thinks that I should be a game designer. A lot of them do, because I often talk about games among them. Like they don't know anything about it, and for some reason they ask me a lot about it. I guess games are really interesting to people who don't know a lot about them. If they ask someone like me who actually like knows shit, but they think that I should get into game design, and I'm like, I don't ever want to learn programming, and that kind of like that instantly makes me not able to do it.
Like game design itself would be fun, but I mean,
I'd love to be the guy who tells programmers what to do. And I'm not ruling that out.
exactly.
Like you can actually like you can get like a degree in like executive game design, but I don't know if I want to do that. But yeah, I'm interested in the overall design of it, but I don't want to get down and dirty. And I think that's really
Right.
common. That's a common opinion of most things, is that like, oh yeah, it's really interesting, but once I get into it, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, like I would have one little design idea, like, okay, I want the character to slide down a ramp here. And then I'm like, okay, now that idea took 30 seconds to enter my head. Now it's going to take 40 hours of reading and practice to get it to actually work. Okay, so that's that question. And then the final question that Colm asks is, who would you be maining in the upcoming Smash Brothers? Well, you don't really play Nintendo games, but if you had to pick.
I'm pretty aware of the roster, especially the ones that carry over from like Smash Bros. 64. I'll tell you who I always played, and I hate to be this guy because this was definitely the a guy at every Smash Brothers get together. I was the guy who chose Kirby. I always played Kirby. I liked being able to make a lot of little double jumps. I liked that a lot, and doing the brick fall move where you turn into a brick in midair. I liked that one a lot.
I'm like a, or for a little while, I was like a wannabe, not tourney guy, because I never did that at all, but I would actually check like the tiers and would care about them, which is a little shameful, but it's, I wanted to play the game skillfully, but I kind of just gave up on that, which is, I have so much more, I have so much more fun playing it that way. Just kind of ignoring all the tournament stuff. And from what I've been playing on the 3DS, Greninja is my main. It's one of the new Pokemon from X and Y. That was actually my starter in Pokemon X. So I, and that was just chance. I didn't, that was before it was announced for the game. So I was like, yeah, it's my boy, Greninja.
I get
And he's kind of a really good balance of being really fucking fast and he hits decently hard, but he has like no recovery time between like when he attacks and when he can attack or move again. Like it's super fast.
I get really annoyed with how many Pokemon characters they put in the Smash games. Because I feel like it's such a cop out, just like, can't think of more characters to include, so let's just throw more Pokemon in there. Because like you can just there's like an infinite amount of Pokemon that you can draw from, and they're all different. And so of course they're the perfect candidate for a Smash game, but they're so uninspired.
Well, Greninja's cool. I mean,
I'll take your word for it. I don't know.
there's a lot of Pokemon that would suck because a lot of them are just kind of generic or gimmicky. But the most amount of design effort in all these Pokemon games forever has always been in the starters and in the legendaries, and those are like the only ones that would even make sense to consider.
Right.
So for as far as which Pokemon to add, even though there's hundreds of them, the pool that you would conceivably select from is not hundreds large. It's much smaller than that. And Greninja's design is pretty interesting too. He's kind of like a frog ninja, so he uses his tongue around himself as like his ninja
Oh, I know
scarf.
this one. Yeah, I know. I know what he
Yeah.
looks like.
So yeah, I mean, I would have liked to see some more like characters from other franchises, but Pokemon's popular, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Dark, there are like Dark Pit, like Pit from Kid Icarus, and then there's Dark Pit.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that came from like Kid Icarus Uprising, but I didn't play it because my brother played that game, and the amount that it had him hitting the L button or something, it broke his L button permanently for Kid Icarus Uprising, and apparently that was a really common problem. It doesn't happen to 3DS XLs, but for the original 3DSs, if you play that game, you probably have a broken L button.
Yeah.
So I kind of avoided it like the plague.
Well, any other questions?
That looks like it for this week. So, guys, if you have questions, and if you've made it this far, just shoot us questions over at questions@pushtoshout.net and we'll read them live on the air.
I have a question. How the hell do we keep getting to almost exactly a minute, an hour 45 for each one of these podcasts?
Don't know, it seems like the natural length.
It's
This
a
is
good
how long it
length.
wants to be.
Yeah. All right, well, good time to end it then.
Yep. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye.